beautiful morning it is, too. Boy, we have had some great harvest weather over the last number of days, I can tell you. Sitting in that grain truck with the sun beating down, looking at a thermometer reading 28 degrees late September, it's great. And happy that the farmers are going strong. I was driving back into the city last night, and that you could just see the dust and the lights in the fields, the combines going strong. It's a great time of the year in this province. A busy time, but there's just this, I don't know, energy that comes with harvest in the province, and I absolutely love it. Okay, I am really looking forward to the next hour of conversation that we're having with my next couple of guests. So we talk federal politics a lot on this program. You can't avoid it. However, I feel like these days it's like playing whack-a-mole, depending on the topic that you want to talk about. One minute we can be talking about geopolitics and, you know, Mark Carney's announcement about recognition of the state of Palestine. We can talk about Ukraine. We can talk about defense spending. Then we bring it inside. We talk about infrastructure projects. Then we remind ourselves that we're so focused on infrastructure enhancement because of what's going on with Trump and tariffs. Oh, yes. And let's not forget Chinese tariffs on the egg industry. I mean, the number of topics that we have to cover when it comes to federal politics, it literally, you could do 4 hours a day, 5 days a week easily on that. Now, if you think back to April, we were in the midst of a federal election. We had no idea what the outcome was going to be, but we brought in panelists. We brought in experts, people that have varying different degrees of expertise, depending on where their life's journey has taken them. And we talked about the federal election. We talked about the parties and their stance on things. And two of my panelists, I'm happy to report, have agreed to join me back on the program today. John Gormley, who probably needs zero introduction on this platform because, of course, he was the host of the John Gormley Show in this province for many years, also legal counsel at Cyferling Law, former member of parliament, joins me in studio. John, thank you for returning to the airwaves.
My pleasure, Evan. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. Also, Doug Richardson of counsel with W Law Firm, former prime minister's chief of staff in Ottawa. He's not shy about saying he's a liberal supporter and also a guest that has been on this program many times. Also joining me in studio, Doug, thank you for being here today.
Pleasure as well to be here. Thanks for the invite.
So basically what I'm hoping we can do over the next hour or so is just reflect on what has been happening federally. It's been a bit of a whirlwind since, of course, our election panel, which you were both panelists, I just mentioned. It's been actually almost 5 months. Maybe we can just start with some general thoughts on what we've seen. Doug, I'm going to let you go first. What have you seen? What has your reaction been to what you've seen, just generally speaking, with the Mark Carney government?
Well, there's been a marked difference in where the country has gone under his leadership. That's maybe not a surprise. For example, when Mr. Harper took over, change in direction, Mr. Mulroney took over, change in direction. But I would say that the dynamism behind the Carney change has been probably almost breathtaking, whether it's talked about changes inside the country, dealing with the U.S. side of things, world travel, trying to foster marketing opportunities. It's been a very busy, productive, I would suggest, period of time for the prime minister, for the party, for the government, and indeed for the country.
Mm-hmm. John?
I'd agree with the first part of Doug's statement. Indeed, it has been breathtaking, the amount of talk. It's been breathtaking, the couple of pivots that Mr. Carney has done, especially on the consumer carbon tax that he personally counseled Justin Trudeau on for many years and advocated. But beyond that, my goodness, actual measurable outcomes are virtually, save for the carbon tax, zero. And I'm in the camp, like a lot of political observers. There was a debate, do we give him 6 months, do we give him a year? I'm in the year camp, because you had 10 failed years of Justin Trudeau. You're not going to fix that in 6 months. But we're now approaching 6 months. In fact, if you look at him being sworn in March, when he became the Liberal leader and the prime minister, nothing in terms of actual achievements. But again, I'm giving him 12 months to see, is there going to be a substantial change?
So, John, let me stay with you on that, because I think that's an interesting point. I had Premier Moe on the program last week. I said to the Premier, I said, you in the early stages of this said that you liked the way you were hearing the Prime Minister speak, but actions, of course, are another thing. Has the rubber hit the road? Premier Moe said it's starting to. Would you go that far, John?
I would, but again, I think Premier Moe and I are in the same camp. We're in the year camp. So as we approach 6 months of Carney from March, a year when he became the Prime Minister, the rubber might be hitting the road. But in terms of the talk, we have a major projects office and a czar who oversees this, a government department. We have $13 billion committed to housing and a government department. So we're setting up lots of government when the answer in Canada for the Trudeau years was five short words. Get out of the way. I mean, we had a regulatory burden. We had overreach by government. And I respectfully disagree with you, Evan, when you talked about, you know, the developments being necessitated because of China and because of the Trump tariffs. No, the Impact Assessment Act of Trudeau, Bill C-69, ground major projects to a halt. Mm. So we need a hell of a lot less government than new departments. So I'm putting Mr. Carney to that test.
So this brings up an interesting conversation. The reason I said that is because there's been this whole introspective look at, okay, we need to be more self-reliant as a country. So part of that means we've got to shore up our infrastructure. And I've had a number of industry experts from Murad Al-Khatib to Tim Gitzel and many others saying, yeah, we've got room for improvement with railways, with roadways, absolutely, with ports, those types of things. So let's talk about the Donald Trump situation, because that was a big part of the election campaign, Doug. If you remember, we were all speculating on who is the best person to deal with Donald Trump. Have we seen traction, or have we seen that it probably didn't matter who we got in terms of the predictability or lack of it with the U.S. president?
So first of all, just before I go there, and you're the moderator, so I'll answer the question, although your leader's saying, God, Doug, get to the answer. But first of all, John's left a fair bit of the story out, and I'm sure he didn't do it by accident. But the fact is, this government under Prime Minister Carney has done a lot of things. It's way more than talk. John was gracious enough to throw in the carbon tax. The fact is, as of July 1st, all federal regulation impacting trade within provinces was eliminated. The federal government announced significant defense spending commitments. The major infrastructure, MPO office, is up and running. And it's interesting, the major projects office is headquartered in Western Canada, in Calgary, headquartered, run by a woman who completed the Trans Mountain Pipeline, which everybody said couldn't get done. Build Canada's or Homes Agency is indeed up and running. And I'm sure John glossed over this by accident, the government introduced a tax cut that impacts 22 million Canadians. So those are action items that have occurred in the last just under 100 days.
I did leave some stuff out. 66,000 jobs disappeared in August.
Well, sure, if you want to be negative. So we've got a new John, we've got a new prime minister, and you're gracious enough to say give him a year. But the fact of the matter is the mood of the country has changed, whether you acknowledge it or not. You can feel it yourself. Every time I run into a conservative, they say to me, you know, Doug, I've never voted liberal. I'm going to give this guy a chance because I like his style and his approach and his magnetism. You can deny it if you want, but the polling data is supporting that.
So that actually leads me to another question, and you still haven't answered the one I just asked.
But John went on, and I felt it important add to the deal.
I've learned to let both of you go on. That's the beauty of having you on the show.
Thank you,
Doug. Donald Trump, has Carney taken the right approach? Are we on a good path there?
So it's a very good point. So I would make an argument that the personalities of the next 6 months will change this way. Mr. Pauly, of being reelected and returning, his raison d'etre in life was to be anti-Trudeau. Well, Mr. Trudeau is gone. The raison d'etre out of the election was to respond to Trump by Mr. Carney. And we've seen a series of undertakings to try to respond to that. If Prime Minister Carney is going to have success, it will be his ability to get a trade agreement of some form, in some fashion, over the next, I would say, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months.
But August 1st was the date.
Well, yeah, but
Mr. Carney said he'd have it delivered.
Yeah, but nobody banked on a president who is changing his views hourly, let alone weekly.
I thought we all did.
Well, I don't think is at the level that it's got to. You'd have to agree with me on that.
So go ahead, Doug.
No, I was just going to say the thing about trade that's so important is we've been impacted in this province. Let me go down the trade route on canola because that's very important to your listeners. And it's very important to me and as it is to you and John. I understand you just came off a tractor.
Grain truck. You're right.
Grain truck. God bless. So the federal government in the past would have been criticized for doing nothing. We've got a federal government under Prime Minister Carney who's responded. I'm sure some, including John, will say in a second it's not enough, but just hear me out. As part of balancing our trade challenges with China, we've announced $370 million of biofuel production so that farmers can sell $75 million worth of marketing worldwide because the Canola Council of Canada should have as much support as it can get out and sell our product. We've made changes, helpful changes on advance payments up to the tune of $500,000 interest free and the Ag Stability Fund. So my point is the government is responding to trade on one major front. They are responding to trade on another front by the work of Minister LeBlanc and his staff and I am optimistic in the same way Kuzma succeeded, we're going to see a positive result.
Okay.
There.
I'm going to jump in, Doug. We're up against the break. John, when we come back, I'm coming to you. Trump and how Carney has done there. And let's talk about tariffs, canola tariffs. Have we gone far enough? John Gormley next. Doug Richardson also joining us here, our political panelists, back for a discussion and a bit of a report card on the federal government so far here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the show. If you are just joining us, this is an enjoyable hour of radio. I enjoy being a spectator. I get to ask the odd question, but my two guests today, great guests, great perspective when it comes to, well, today we're talking about federal politics. I've got Doug Richardson joining us of counsel to W Law Firm, former Prime Minister's Chief of Staff in Ottawa, and a fairly unapologetic Liberal supporter. Can I say that, Doug?
100%.
Yeah, okay. And John Gormley, who is legal counsel at Cipherling Law, but of course spent many years behind this microphone talking to you on the John Gormley Show, also a member of Parliament for the Conservatives, and happy to be here, I'm sure. John, this must just feel like being home again.
It does.
Well, listen, we ended the conversation with Doug talking about the relationship between Trump and Carney. Is it getting us where we need to get to? Can you just give me your comments on that?
It's fascinating because the initial engagement, of course, is what was the election question. The Conservatives wanted to save Canada from 10 more years of Liberals and Justin Trudeau. The Liberals and Mr. Carney wanted to save us from the existential threat of Donald Trump. Carney, like he did in Brexit, where he played Chicken Little, overplayed Chicken Little in Britain, you know, was all about urgency, crisis, elbows up. That worked electorally. Donald Trump says he likes him a lot, so clearly the engagement's been good. He's not been able to deliver a trade deal, but Carney is a very adept negotiator. He's done it for a living, and may I wish him the best in President Trump, who we all knew, regardless of who the prime minister was, would have the usual Trump erratic approach to Canadian trade. So Let's talk quickly on the tariff front. Canada is continuing to negotiate. Mr. Carney, who loves the United Nations, is unhappy that Trump's done side deals with Japan. He's done side deals with other countries. But the Canadian relationship here, good example. A day and a half ago now, the Liberals finally knocked off the great huge tariffs to China on electric batteries. We all knew from the beginning that was the main irritant on canola. We all knew Canada's $35 billion Trudeau loan and grant package on Canadian battery industry wasn't working because people aren't buying EVs without a government subsidy. Carney, the night he was sworn in, could have said, hey, this tariff on the Chinese EVs is really hurting canola. I'm going to pause the whole issue of EVs and let's be grown-ups and let's just get rid of that. It took him till now, 4 months in office. So canola producers are justifiably upset. Carney's got a good negotiating style. I grant him that, and I wish him well. When the rubber meets the road, he's still tightly engaged as an extremist on climate and a guy who's better wired to tell us the world is ending. We need a more positive strategic approach than that.
But, John, to be fair, I think we all understood, and the premier said it himself, at his premier's dinner a few days ago here in Saskatoon, we recognized that the EV tariff was a response to the U.S., to the federal government request by Biden that we adhere to this.
And Trump dumped it in November.
Well, but we were responding to the U.S. initially and doing what we'd been asked to do. And as the premier of the province said, this is a complicated arrangement to make sure we did not offend the U.S. negotiators along the way.
No, so I don't accept that. I accept the Canadian, but the Canadian EV strategy, you know, we're in the 10th month now, right? Clearly 10th month of 2025. The first month of 26, 2 months from now, one in five Canadian vehicles must by law be electric. Yeah, now, you don't have to have gone to school to know, in Oxford, to know that's never going to work. So Carney has paused it. He still hasn't had the courage to dump it and say, let's go back and
but
try it
But he can't
again.
Dump it. I'm
sure he can.
No, well, then you're overriding the value and the view of the premier on this. The premier made it very
clear. The premier hates the EV mandate,
I understand.
But he knew what he was saddled with.
But he understands that we have a risk of alienating the president of the United States even more.
Who has walked away from an EV mandate.
Well, listen, I'm quoting your premier, my premier.
I was going to say, it's both of your premiers. It's
yeah,
both.
I mean,
my premier, but he's been crystal clear. I mean, we all understand
why. So are you saying Scott Moe wanted the EV strategy,
no,
Doug?
What Scott Moe
say
said.
It straight.
No, just what Scott Moe said at the dinner was that he understood why we were respecting, and he said publicly, and he said in Ottawa after the meeting with the canola group and the prime minister, this was the reason they had to keep it. But
okay,
let's
I got to jump in. I got to jump in because we're up against the break. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, Doug Richardson, John Gormley, my two guests, we're doing a deep dive and a bit of a reflective assessment on what's gone on so far with the federal government. Two questions that I have going in different directions. One is with regard to budget. When we come back, I'm curious to know the panelists' thoughts on can we cut and reduce the deficit on one hand, if we're trying to build and grow the country with nation building projects on the other. And the other question is about becoming an energy superpower. Can you do that if you don't change the policies, which over the last 10 years have been seen by many in the energy industry as restrictive? So those comments, those questions, and our panelists, Doug Richardson and John Gormley, when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
I think if we are going to build the strongest economy in the G7, and we will, we need to be clear about the scale of the crisis we are in. We need to be clear about the scale of investment that we need. $60 billion in new projects announced last week. $200 billion in investment announced last week. That's the scale of what we need.
You got a friend in Welcome back to the show, Evan Bray. Great to have you here. here. We are talking federal politics in general, and we're coming at it from a few different angles. And I'm happy to have my two guests in studio, John Gormley and Doug Richardson, who you've both heard many times. We bring them in for political panels. At the break, we put them in their corners. They have their spit buckets, take the gloves off, and here we are back ready to go again. The bell rings. Thanks. You know what? I really appreciate it. I actually get a kick out of you two because on the air, the conversation can get heated. Off the air, you can be showing each other pictures of your grandkids. It's a good, 100%. It's a good relationship. You
exactly.
Found. So let's talk about budget, because today the parliamentary budget officer basically announced he expects to see a sharp increase in the deficit to $68.5 billion. That's not great news. Some say not unexpected with the level of investment. What are you expecting to see, John, in this November budget? And should we be concerned about a growing deficit?
Well, of course we should be, but I think I'm trying to cipher back, and it's been well over a year since we actually had a budget that was brought to the Canadian House of Commons and passed. You know, they love these economic statements, which started as kind of midterm budget updates, but now are seen often, sadly, as substitutes for budgets. I have a nickel bet with a couple of my golf buddies that it will be a $100 billion deficit. And I've been on that one certainly since Mr. Carney. And you heard that clip you played. He actually used the word crisis. Urgency crisis elbows up defines Mark Carney. So whose money are we going to, quote, invest in this Canadian productivity enhancement? We know we'd like actual investors' money. Government money is a phony investment. So Mr. Carney, as I said earlier, has to, quote, get out of the way. That's the government regulatory hurdle and imposition we've been into. So I don't know what the budget's going to tell us, but Mr. Carney's been throwing around $13 billion on housing, billions on different initiatives. That doesn't get printed or made in thin air. So I think that does have an elevated deficit, and elevated deficits, as we all know, have terrible reflections on inflation, terrible reflections on interest rates.
Doug?
So the budget challenge is interesting. I think what the Prime Minister has tried to say a couple of times is I'm drawing a line between what would be ordinary budget expenditures that may benefit each of us as individuals and expenditures that will create investment that impact the country in the long term. It's interesting, the International Monetary Fund recently said that Canada's GDP since Christmas is growing at the fastest rate. They did the best job in fighting inflation, and the debt GDP ratio is the lowest of the G7 countries. Now, I actually had the opportunity, as you know, Evan, I spent 2.5 years as a chief of staff to a finance minister. I'm not talking about Mr. Turner, but Mark Lalonde. And the budget writing process is complicated because of the interest groups all across Canada pressing in. For example, this province is sending two cabinet ministers, the mayors of a half dozen cities to Ottawa, and Sarim and Suma to talk about infrastructure. That's a logical ask, but the federal government will have to find the previous infrastructure program with this province alone was $900 million. So I differentiate, Evan and John, between what would be an investment type budget that changes the face of the country and what is a budget that simply makes my personal taxes lower.
But who invests? You know, if investment type budget, to use your words, is more government spending, which I think you're alluding that it is, infrastructure is fundamental and it's important. And we all agree with that. Government can often incent infrastructure by spending certain amounts of money and amortizing it over the capital side of government spending. But when government's going to be the only game in town, and increasingly, I mean, I hear what you say about GDP, but, you know, let's look at the fact. Since COVID, we have not had a decline in machinery and equipment spending in Canada. We had it last month. So, first time since COVID. So, you know, so the private sector and average investing Canadians aren't seeing the case yet, and that's a problem.
So, but that's what the major project office is supposed to be doing. Let's use
but it's
the
government department.
No, but let's use foreign as an example. The foreign project,
yep.
Foreign, F-O-R-A-N, for your listeners.
50% yep. Already completed.
Exactly.
$70 million in Saskatchewan government tax abatements.
Yes.
So what's Ottawa going to do to get foreign across the line?
But the feds, the skill set of this woman they brought in is to reach out to the capital markets and help a company like Foreign find financial support that isn't necessarily federal government money. There's already federal government money in.
Okay, so this is a really good segue. I'm jumping in because this is a great segue to my next question, which is, and Doug, I'm going to let you keep going on this. Can we become the energy superpower? Because you're talking about the investment in the mine near Creighton. But I mean, there's 32 potential infrastructure projects, which includes talk of an economic corridor, Northwest Coast oil pipeline project. And as John was pointing out, the best case scenario is not federal government investment, but incentivizing capital to come in from private business, private industry. Can we achieve that, though, without changing regulations and policies that we've been hearing Premier Moe and Premier Smith asking, begging, yelling at the federal government to change?
So the yelling is all about emission caps. And can we set that aside for a moment? We could have 2-hour debate on that. But the way we will achieve energy superpower is through something that's going on in Alberta that many of your listeners will only tangentially be aware of. And I'm talking about the Pathways Project. So this is a decarbonization project. Well, just hear me.
Sorry, I just laughed. That was okay.
A decarbonization project.
Sorry, I keep laughing.
That is designed to move more oil and gas to the West Coast. It's a positive initiative that all governments are behind, that the private sector is involved in, and the major energy producers. So to answer your question, I think there are options out there that are attractive to drive us. The woman who is now running the MPO in Calgary worked for TransAlta, private sector, very successful. Then she did the Trans Mountain Pipeline successfully. I'm just saying that, and her main job, she's only done one interview, unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe she's wise, just do her job, go to work and don't worry about granting interviews. But she said, my main job is to find capital to help move these projects
along.
Can
she do that, though, Doug, without these policies being changed? And you mentioned the cap, but I mean, there's lots. I think Daniel Smith had a list of 10.
Yeah, yes. I wouldn't, as you just said, Doug, let's put emission caps aside. Why? In his work with the Glasgow Banking Group, in his work with the UN, in his work with the World Economic Forum, Mark Carney is a climate zealot. A zealot. Now, he's trenched that back a little, no consumer carbon tax, but this is why he can't move on the electric car strategy. He can't move on certain things. If you think an energy superpower is going to be based on decarbonizing oil in a pipeline, ask OPEC where it is today on decarbonizing oil.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm trying to talk about a major project that's out there that the private sector is involved in that achieves two things. Helps on the carbon side, helps on the production of oil and gas, and helps involve the private sector.
But that doesn't make you an energy superpower.
Sure it does. We're going to move several hundred thousand barrels more a day to the West Coast. Why isn't that, or south? Any one of a number of these. Why isn't that an, why does everything have to be conventional oil and gas? What I'm saying to you is I think the Premier of Alberta likes that project.
But I'm saying LNG, even though one of the five projects was to increase it by 60%, we could use 6 LNG export terminals from the Saguenay up and down the coast to BC.
100% agree.
But the Liberals with Bill C-69 and the climate obsession, remember, natural gas is still seen as a bad thing. Compared to coal, I cannot see how you can construe it that way.
Maybe Minister Guilbeault does, but the present government of Carney does not. And the LNG project, by the way, there's now one completed moving product. A second one was announced as part of the Big Five by the Prime Minister.
Yeah, at the same Kitimat facility, which again is a good start. But again, until Canada has a serious discussion about what it means to literally be at the adults' table in the world economy, we're going to keep talking about investments in five projects, Doug.
Can't you be positive once in a while?
Hey. I can be positive in that I wish Mark Carney the best, but he's got to fundamentally alter his view
I'm not paying either of you the big bucks to be positive, so don't worry about being positive. And I know I'm paying you nothing, so thank you for doing this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up this discussion, but I want to talk a little bit about internally cost of living, immigration, maybe defense spending, firearms if we have time.
I still have firearms in Palestine on my list.
I've got both of them on mine as well. So we'll take a break. We'll come back and finish up with John Gormley, Doug Richardson here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Friend in me. You've got a friend in me.
This is a prime minister who said we'd have the fastest growing economy in the G7. We have the fastest shrinking economy in the G7. He said grocery prices would go down. They're going up faster than ever before. He's really reminding us all of that sign at the bar. Free beer tomorrow. But you come back the next day and the beer is still not free and tomorrow never comes. Why is it that all of this prime minister's promises of yesterday turn into today's disappointments?
You got a friend.
Every day, lots of back and forth during question period. Now that Pierre Poilievre, of course, is back in the house, the fall session is underway. And joining us to wrap up our conversation today, Doug Richardson and John Gormley in studio. It's been a great chat. These hours fly by when I have you two gentlemen in. So I'm going to give each of you a couple of minutes to talk about, we've been reflecting on what we've seen in roughly the first 150 days in office. What would you like to see going forward in the next few months? John, I'll start with you.
Well, let me consider this, and that's a great question, Evan, but stuff we didn't get to today. So I brought two of them.
Good.
And I judge Mr. Carney quite harshly on this. The gun bans, the so-called gun grab, all the gun seizures, you know, Trudeau going crazy with orders in council, you know, over 2,000 models of guns. So the Liberals this week double down. You know, Mr. Carney had an opportunity because if he is a grown-up, fiscally conscious banker, he looks at all the Trudeau things and says, boy, that wasn't the way to go. Let's just grandfather it all. You know, anybody who's got a gun today, you keep it till you die, and that's the way. The Liberals did that, you know, in the 90s. We've had it. And by the way, it wouldn't cost you $700 million because the Fraser Institute says between $4 and $6 billion. Mr. Carney could have saved a $700 million. So what does he do? He doubles down with this incompetent minister of public safety, you know, announcing they're going to grab 200 guns in Cape Breton, for goodness sakes. Mr. Carney could have been better. Palestine. Mike Pompeo, the first Trump term Secretary of State, practically absurd, morally reprehensible, and will only prolong the danger to Israel and the anguish of everyday Gazans. The logic of terrorists has been ratified by nearly 2 years ago to the day, perpetrating the worst attack on the Jewish people since the Holocaust, and the twisted logic that the move of somehow recognizing Palestine would isolate Hamas by empowering the illegitimate, unpopular terror supporting Palestinian Authority is beyond fanciful. I mean, they haven't had an election there since 06. Mr. Carney has misjudged this Palestine issue dangerously so. So guns, he's disappointed. Palestine, he's disappointed even more. But in fairness to my good friend Doug across the table, I wish Carney well in trying to get real investment into the Canadian economy.
Well, let's very quickly respond to Palestine. The position of governments from 1947 on, including a check today, and you were part of the government, John, through the Mulroney years and even through Prime Minister Harper years, very strong supporters of Israel, but two-state has always been a historic position of this country. By the way, we're not alone on this position. France, England, Australia, many countries have asked for the fact is the matter, something has to be done to break the logjam in the Middle East if President Netanyahu is not going to alter his path. I'm pro-Israel, but changes are needed. You asked us to cover a couple other topics. Let me touch on immigration very quickly, because I know it's a matter in so many areas of concern, Evan. First of all, the challenge is this, so the viewing audience is listening, or the listening audience follows the same course. Universities in Canada have pushed and pushed and pushed for a long time to get more students here. Why is that? Because they can charge 3, 4, and 5 times rates. The problem is universities have not dealt with housing. Without housing, we've had other created problems. I believe this government has made it crystal clear they're going to move on the immigration side. They've announced how they're going to move on housing. So hopefully some of these issues that are requirements of the new government to address are going to be dealt with. The last thing I would say is it looks like Minister Fraser is going to move on bail issues in one fashion or another.
And okay. The notwithstanding clause. Don't get me started.
Okay. I'm giving you each just an opportunity to give me a letter. You're filling out the report card for this Prime Minister Mark Carney government in the first, let's call it 150 days. What grade are you giving Doug?
I would give him an A for the work to date.
John?
A good marker should never prejudge what they think of a student. So today he's a solid C student. I fear he could be an F, but gosh, I would hope to get him up to a B.
This has been a great conversation. John Gormley, Doug Richardson, thank you both for popping into the studio.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Doug Richardson of Counsel, W Law Firm. John Gormley, legal counsel at Cyferling Law. Both of them deep roots in federal politics, and that makes for a great conversation on this program. And I'm very appreciative that they're willing to stop in from time to time and share their thoughts with us. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.